Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Buck's First Thoughts, the news you need to get through your day in 45 minutes. Make sure you subscribe on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Perhaps the Biden team was never serious about calls for unity, because they certainly didn't last very long, did they? As the nation prepares for the January 20th peaceful transfer of power, there's an air of menace hanging over our nation's capital. Instead of pomp and circumstance, D.C. is bristling with barbed wire and HESCO barriers and thousands of National Guard deployed. What's going on here? It's hard to think that national healing is the Biden-Harris objective while their underlings transform the streets of D.C. into a fortress on lockdown. You've no doubt heard the media outlets talking about how there will be more National Guard deployed in D.C. than in Iraq and Afghanistan, two theaters of war combined. They will share this continuously until the moment Biden is sworn in, and then well afterwards, because the whole purpose here is to heighten the public's anxiety of the perceived risk of another insurrection. Oh, what was that insurrection the first time around, you might ask? You mean the one that involved a mostly peaceful protest that then did have a section of it devolve into a riot? And one police officer was killed, one protester was killed by direct action of the of law enforcement and also of participants, depending on which one we're talking about. And they were trying to do what exactly? The belief is that they were going to overthrow the government, that QAnon shaman or whatever walking around in a furry hat with a spear was really going to seize control of the Congress. I don't think anybody, including that guy, believed that's what was going to happen. But you see, the theatrics that are underway in D.C. are meant to exceed the actual threat. We've talked about the Capitol Hill riot on January 6th. It was lawless. It was awful. It was stupid. And anyone who broke the law should be held to account. But there was no real effort to overthrow the government by force. Calling that an insurrection is an exaggeration, and it's an intentional one. It's one with real consequences. The unprecedented martial preparations for this inauguration are meant to look as though they're preparing for a foreign military to invade our nation's capital at any minute. What's the real threat here? Internet chatter? Do you remember how we were told constantly during the Obama administration about how there were an unprecedented number of threats online against President Obama, And then you also recall that there were people who somehow lost their jobs for mere criticism of Obama or for crossing the press when it came to Obama, because they create a climate of fear in which everyone gets treated as though they're insurrectionists, as though they're far radical extremists. That's why they exaggerate all of this all along. They expand out the net. They want to capture everyone, whether you're reasonable or not. You get lumped in with the crazies, right? And speech equals violence, you see. So your words have to be suppressed. It's not enough merely to say we can have political differences. You are no longer in this country allowed to say what you think happened in the election. They're saying, including the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania, for example, that that is not protected speech. Now, what's the formulation they use for that? Well, if people can say that they think the election was stolen, then people will act on that. They'll be violent because of that. And so we have to stop it. You see, this is what they do. If people can say that they thought that Barack Obama was a socialist and a bad president, a leftist, then there'll be other people who decide to act on that and write in threats. And the Secret Service then has to investigate it. They lump it all together. They treat it like it's the same. What an effective mechanism of control. They're trying to show us right now what the next 4 years are going to look like. That's why there are photos of National Guard troops sleeping on the marble floors of the Capitol building. That's meant to get all of this attention. Very few people have asked, are these measures even necessary? Don't they have sleeping pads and sleeping bags? And why are they on the cold marble floor of the Capitol building? Doesn't that seem excessive? But the implication is clear. The Democrats want America to see D.C. as a city under siege. And that means that you have to ask the next question. Who is it under siege from? Trump voters. Those are the optics right now. That's what they want people to think and believe about our nation's capital. They are setting up a show of force commensurate with their overblown fears of this recent right-wing coup attempt from Trump voters. They've convinced a large number of Democrats that these extreme measures are necessary because unless they were to deploy 26, 27,000 National Guard plus all the Secret Service and FBI, unless they deploy all of them, another right-wing faction will attempt a second overthrow of the United States government. Hold on a second. There wasn't a first attempt at an overthrow of the government. There was a riot. There was a protest that got out of control and turned into, in part, a riot in the United States Capitol that did not last very long, was put down, and for which people are being punished, in some cases punished severely. And keep in mind, while all this is happening, that there's actually no intelligence or proof that such a plot against our government is imminent. There might be some online chatter from people who are upset about the 2020 election outcome. They're venting. They're trying to get attention from their buddies. But that's not a serious or credible threat. And there are threats all the time. People who work in media get threats. I get threats. What do you do about this? You go on with life. Unless it's credible and actionable, you can't worry about it. And yet what we see here is the elevation of bits of internet chatter to being an imminent threat to our very system of government. That's what they want America to think in D.C. right now. And let's not forget the 4 years of Russia collusion lunacy, since we're talking about conspiracy theories here. That was mainstream among elected Democrats and their corporate media lackeys. Completely mainstream. Russia collusion. You said it. You got more clicks, more viewers. There was never any punishment for this. There was never any backlash against it from the system, from the elites, from the apparatus. Look, let's be very clear. From a purely security-based standpoint, the military preparations this week in D.C. are an overreaction. D.C. is the most heavily policed and patrolled city in America, even during normal times. Just try to cross the street and jaywalk near a Capitol police officer under normal circumstances, and you'll see the ferocity with which even the most mundane and trivial rules are enforced in and around our nation's capital. And it's understandable that there's some concern. It's understandable that crowd control should be taken into account. Let's also remember that in 2016, Antifa was running riot through the streets of D.C. And there were no major charges brought against them. They lit a limousine on fire in our nation's capital in broad daylight on Inauguration Day. And were screaming, "Not my president." But that was just fine. There was no real worry about that. According to the Democrats, that was a mostly peaceful protest. Every American should feel like on a process level, the continuation of our political tradition of the peaceful transfer of power is important and should be supported. And it almost will be a peaceful, orderly event. Whatever Trump voters think of the integrity of the last election or the policies of the incoming administration, there should be an understanding that this is how it goes, right? And I know our politics are messy. I know people are angry right now, but we have ways to deal with that. But what the Democrat Party is doing right now is intentionally making the inauguration seem like it's occurring under a state of actual siege of our capital, as though this is 1812 and the British are on the way to burn down the White House. This is nuts. And we know who they blame for this. This is being done for political leverage, and it almost certainly is going to be the justification for more aggressive surveillance, not against actual extremists or people who are planning violence, but against people with pro-Trump, anti-Democrat views. You see, this is part of the playbook. The Democrats are all posing as aggrieved victims now, terrified for their very existence, so that they can make real victims of their political opponents later on. This, unfortunately, is likely to work, which means it's a troubling time for the country. The people claiming to be the oppressed, the people claiming to be the ones that aren't allowed to share their politics publicly without fear, are the ones who are actually doing the purges. They're the ones who are actually shutting down news sites, shutting down social media apps, and calling for boycotts and the surveillance state to expand to keep an eye on their political opponents. That's what's happening right now. We can all see it. And it's why even the pretense of calls for unity from the Biden-Harris camp ring hollow.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely, and it's so easily debunked. It's simply false that thousands of dead people voted. It is false that there were thousands of ballot signatures that were fake. It's also false that Dominion voting machines switched thousands of votes. None of this is true. And all Republican leaders have to do is to say that the election was not stolen. And yeah, if they do that, then they can calm down tension.
All you have to do is submit, Congressman Ted Lieu says. All you have to do is bend the knee, say everything you said was wrong, and then we can have unity until we need you to bend the knee again and admit that you're wrong on something else. Why isn't that working better? I don't understand. Why isn't it really bringing everybody together? Gee, I don't know. Ted, maybe some people still have questions and they don't trust Democrats who lied about the last election for 4 years and still do to this day. Right? They still continue with this nonsense. But it's something that the left wants to hear. They want to believe, the Democrats want to believe, that they have extended a hand to the other side and we're the ones who are slapping it away. The Democrats want to believe that it is conservatives who are being unreasonable in this whole process and are adding fuel to the fire of our political discontent. And the Democrats are just being great, open-minded, patriotic Americans who, you know, come on. We see what's really happening. They're putting people on TV night after night, day after day, who are saying that Trump terrorists are more dangerous than Al-Qaeda. We played that audio for you yesterday. They're actually saying this stuff, that we should increase the surveillance state to look at Trump voters. and that we should scan the National Guard. We should vet National Guard members for Trumpian sympathies. I'm not exaggerating. Here you go. MSNBC, some guy who used to be a senior FBI official, if that's not terrifying enough. Figliuzzi, here he is, play 13.
As more and more evidence develops, Andrea, that there were active and former military and police within that insurrectionist crowd, I think this is a very valid precautionary measure. But I want to also caution that this not be some false sense of security. Well, everyone has been checked out by the FBI. Let's understand something, and we learned it painfully during the insurrection. The signs of radicalization really are not that someone has a criminal record or that someone is on a terrorist watch list, but rather that they have online postings that indicate radicalization and an intention for violence. The FBI doesn't have those kinds of resources, nor do they have the time frame in this race against the clock to check out 25,000 people's social media postings, nor may they even have the legal authority to do so. That's my concern.
I just want to point out that this has been widely reported. Oh, I should say this should have been widely reported. It has been reported, but not nearly enough. Hashtag Kill Mike Pence was trending for a while on Twitter recently. Okay? That was a hashtag on Twitter. And I just want to... Do you think the FBI is going to track down all those people? Do you think they're all gonna face prosecution for a threat against a federal official in interstate commerce? No! They are not. Oh, wow. It's almost like there's a huge double standard here. Political violence is something the left excelled in through all of 2020. But there was one incident that they can attribute to the right at the Capitol building after the election in the beginning of 2021. And we're supposed to forget who was burning down buildings all summer. We're supposed to forget who was rioting, attacking police. Attacking a federal courthouse is also an attack on our system, for example. Yeah, I know it's not the Capitol building, but it's also, you know, not an outhouse in the middle of a field somewhere that no one cares about. It's a federal building. They tried to light it on fire in Portland, but you don't see any effort to. Oh, no. Antifa's just an idea, they say. It's not even a movement. It's not even a real thing. They're not scanning people's social media enough. What'll get you tossed off social media? What'll get you in trouble these days? You already know. You can't say the election was stolen, which is that is First Amendment protected speech. But you can't say it. If you do, they'll take action against you. And how far a leap is it from you are now kicked off social media to you are now on the radar? I just have to remind you of this. They used informants. They used agents, people acting on behalf of the government to go after George Papadopoulos, and they used FISA warrants on Carter Page. What was that all about? Trying to get after Trump and go after Trump people. But those are completely absurd, fabricated cases. And they paid no real penalty for this. A few people, the FBI lost their jobs or their pensions. Nobody went to prison. Andy McCabe, former acting FBI director, lied about it. No real consequences for him. So what's the message? What's the lesson? More importantly, what's the lesson that we take from this? They can get away with stuff like this. But now they're bringing pressure. They're mobilizing all across society for the suppression of what you could say is Trumpist ideas. Okay, they're trying to destroy Trumpist ideas, not even just repudiate Trump the man. And so what are you even allowed to say online? Are you allowed to say that the Russia collusion investigation was a hoax? I'm saying it. But is that now? Do independent fact checkers disagree with me? They're going to shut that down, too. They're going to rewrite the history. In fact, they're even telling us they plan to rewrite our history. Play 16.
They will not write their history. We will write their history. And their shame will last forever. They are carved like they are carved like etching into granite onto history's list of villains in this country. Mark Meadows, Lindsey Graham, Kevin McCarthy, Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Mo Brooks, and too many more to mention. There will be no forgetting. There will be no forgiveness. We do not seek retribution, but we do seek accountability and justice for an assault and attack on the government of the United States of America, that killed six people. And for the first time in the history of our country, some 150 years after the end of the Civil War, the Confederate flag at long last reached the United States Capitol and was paraded through the rotunda as this illiberal fascistic mob desecrated the floors of the House of Representatives and the Senate. They don't get to rewrite what happened.
I want to be very clear. They do seek retribution. Don't forget that.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Follow Buck on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Historically, we will find out who he's beholden to, who pulls his strings. I would love to see his phone records to see whether he was talking to Putin the day that the insurgents invaded our capital. But we now know that not just him, but his enablers, his accomplices, his cult members have the same disregard for democracy. Do you think we need a 9/11 type commission to investigate and report everything that they can pull together and explain what happened?
I do. Let me, again, to your point of who is he beholden to, as I've said over and over, as I said to him in that picture with my blue suit,
right,
as I was leaving, what I was saying to him as I was pointing rudely at him, with you, Mr. President, all roads lead to Putin. I don't know what Putin has on him politically, financially, or personally, but what happened last week was a gift to Putin because Putin
That's right.
wants to undermine democracy in our country and throughout the world. And these people, unbeknownst to them maybe, are Putin puppets. They were doing Putin's business when they did that at the incitement of an insurrection by the President of the United States. So, yes, we should have a 9/11 commission, and there's strong support in the Congress to do that.
You need to hear this because this is what is going to happen. That's Hillary and Nancy Pelosi.
She's a podcast guest at the 9/11 commission.
Chardonnay Nancy strikes again. She's sitting there with Hillary and they're having this chit chat about Putin, Putin's role in this. She's saying she wants to pull the president's phone records. You heard it. Let's pull the president's phone records to see if he's talking to Putin on the day of what happened at Capitol Hill. These people are insane. This has nothing to do with Putin or Russia. Nothing. And yeah, you could always make the case that any day that's a bad day for America, any day of riots or lawlessness, and we know this is true, China also benefits from that. Any country that is an adversary of the United States likes to see unrest, destabilization, dissension, you know, at the deepest levels, divisiveness. Yeah, they benefit from that, but that's not unique to the situation at all. On behalf of Putin? Really? QAnon shaman or whatever running around there with the furry hat on? He was doing this on behalf of Putin? Unbeknownst to him, though? Look, this is one of the reasons that I was so, and I know people, the initial reaction was, but Buck, people are so upset, they're so angry. And I said, I know, but this is, you know, it's like the boss in all the movies. You know, this was really, you saw this a lot in 90s movies, 90s action movies. There's this, you know, smug jerk of a boss. And this is often true in like the cop movies and, you know, the rogue police officer who's trying to get the job done. And what he really wants is to get up in the hero's face and just antagonize him and be so, you know, unfair to him that he finally just, you know, pops him one in the face, punches him right in the jaw. And as much as that may feel like it's a reaction that's been building up over time, guess what? Then it's hand in your badge and your gun. You know, now your job's in jeopardy. And the smug bureaucrat gets what he wants. I knew that this Capitol Hill riot was going to be used to the maximum by the Democrats. The moment that it started happening, I said, oh, my God, what is going on here? First of all, it was just upsetting. It should not have happened on any level as an American. But beyond that, I said they're going to take something that's, you know, on the scale of let's say on the scale of insurrection, one being a person standing on a street corner with a sign that says, you know, overthrow America by himself, and 10 being, you know, battalion level armed insurgency guys with machine guns and heavy weapons making a move to secure government buildings and opening fire. Right. That's a 10. That's a straight up coup. You know, this was like a 4 or 5, maybe. And they're treating it like it was a 9. That's the point. They're treating it like it went far beyond, like this was, we just barely maintained control of the Capitol. They're grossly exaggerating, but I knew they would. Because there's political benefit in it for them. I know some of you are saying, Buck, it's a 2 or a 3. You know, you understand what I'm saying. That they've taken this and made it they've treated it like this was a Trump-backed full-on, they're calling it an insurrection. I mean, you know what that means. I mean, there's a reason we have something called the Insurrection Act. It's to put down armed rebellions within our own borders. That's what the history that Democrats are writing right now is they just avoided thousands of people on Capitol grounds. They've said kidnapping and even executing members of Congress, you know, opening fire and seizing the Capitol building and creating a military confrontation. They're treating it like that's what happened. That is not what happened. OK, it was a riot. It was people being stupid. They got rowdy and some people got hurt. Some people got killed. Shouldn't have happened. But this is not an open coup effort against the United States government. But because they're setting that narrative in place, the Democrats are solidifying that narrative right now as they're also taking power of the government. Their reaction to this, and this is what I'm trying to tell you, this is what I'm trying to warn you of, their reaction, as unfair as it is, as wrong as it is going to be based upon treating this as an actual armed insurrection against the United States government. Do you see? Yes, we're going to argue against this and try to convince as many of our fellow Americans as possible. Come on, guys. It wasn't what they're saying it is. It was a riot. It was wrong, but it wasn't a real concerted effort called on by the actual president of the United States to overthrow the government. But all the pieces they're putting in place right now all the things that they're talking about, expansion of surveillance of their political opponents, changing laws and statutes to focus more on right-wing extremism, it's geared toward that. They've now created a narrative and they're going to execute it. Look what they were able to do with Russia collusion. It was a fabrication. It was all based on some guy collecting rumors from people that were Russian disinformation, Christopher Steele, and they used this they took this to the top of the FBI. They had the FBI director. They had other people. They had the CIA director, all spun up, all freaked out about Russia using Trump as a pawn. And there must be deeper ties. You just heard Clinton and Pelosi talking about this on a podcast. I can't believe Hillary Clinton has a podcast. Who wants to listen to Hillary Clinton? Good God. But they're still going with this. With this whole Putin's puppet thing. It was never true. It doesn't exist. It's not real. But look what they were able to do with that. Now they have something. Make no mistake about it. This gives them an opening. This gives them an opportunity to push for the most tyrannical suppression of conservative speech, ideas, and ideology in my lifetime. That's what we're going into right now. That is the storm that we are steering right into the center of. And people still, I think, are stuck in a state of disbelief. They can't imagine that their fellow Democrats would really do that. Or perhaps they can imagine it, but they think that Trump has a plan and Trump is going to swoop in and save us. No, we have to take what Trump represented and we have to be the ones. We have to be the Americans who represent those ideas and that style of pushing back against the establishment, the swamp, and the elites. It's now on all of us. You know, Trump, you know, in ancient times, sometimes they would send forward a champion. Have you ever seen the movie, Troy with, Brad Pitt and a bunch of other famous actors? This was practiced sometimes where you would send forward a champion and whoever won the battle would then the other army would submit, right? Depending on whichever side won that 1v1 battle. You know, I understand for a lot of people, Trump was the champion sent out before the conservative, and I'm speaking metaphorically here, of course, the conservative army, so to speak, and he was vanquishing foes left and right, and that was the perception. And I'm here to tell you that Trump is no longer in that position. We don't have one person standing in the front of the rest of the movement who is blazing the trail, who is pushing back and who is invincible. We had a sense that Trump was invincible. I understand politically they could not stop him. And now they just did. And we can talk about the election and integrity and the media and the suppression of the Hunter Biden story and the suppression of the truth about COVID lockdowns, all these different things. And we will. But we also need to take stock of where we are right now. Who's standing for conservative values, ideas, constitutionalism in this country right now? You are. It's up to all of us. There is no hero. There is no champion right now who is the great defender of any of this. Perhaps one will emerge, but in the meantime, it's on you. It's on me. And it requires us to understand exactly what we face from the opposition, because they are mobilizing to use the apparatus of the state, to use the media's bitterness about Trump for 4 years. You understand? They don't just want dominance in the ratings back. They don't just want the ability to be the narrative creators. They want payback. They want to go after people that they think stole their glory from them for years here. That's what's happening. This is why all the deplatforming and everything else that's going on is something we must pay attention to. And of course, while they do all this, there are still some who are pretending that, yeah, Democrats are calling for unity. I will say this. If you submit, you will be unified in a sense. You'll just give up who you are as part of that unity. That's the choice they offer you. Just admit that everything you believed in was wrong. Every vote that you cast for the last 4 years or every idea that you shared that was in any way echoed by, or perhaps you were echoing Trump's ideas. Anything you did with that, you have to pay penance for that now. You have to repudiate it. You were totally wrong. Bend the knee, beg forgiveness. And they're hoping you don't figure out that they still want to destroy you even after you do all that. But maybe they'll let you think you've got unity for a day or two. But they still want to make you give up that part of yourself, abandon those ideas, admit you were wrong and you were less than for thinking what you did. That's the unity the left is calling for right now. So you do have a choice. I have a choice. We all do. I could turn right now on the whole Trump movement. Oh, my gosh. Become one of these celebrated former conservatives. You know, I'd spend 6 months. Oh, I'd get a book deal. I'd spend 6 months going on MSNBC and CNN. Then, oh, Buck, you know, all of us. What made you come to realize that everything Trump ever said or stood for was awful and evil and wrong? You know, tell us more about this. Liberals at home saying he's still disgusting and I hate him. But this Sexton guy at least woke up to Trump now. I say no. I don't back off the ideas. I don't back off what the movement stood for one bit. I just have never put that much stock or faith in any one man or any one person as the embodiment of a political movement. This is a movement. It is not a cult. And the movement continues on. That's where our focus has to be now. What are the ideas that really mattered? What can we do to support them today? Because the other option is submit, bend the knee, you know, and if you want, tell all your liberal friends about how you've totally changed your outlook here, and they'll pat you on the head for a day or two, and then a week later they'll still think that you're some rube, some easily fooled buffoon who fell for the Trump spell. I say no. Bring it. We're not done yet.
You're in the Freedom Hut. Thanks for listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Get the latest from Buck at BuckSexton.com.
And so I just want Senator Schumer to understand that he is the right person at this time for this moment to deliver the relief that hopefully President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris will bring forward with the support of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer so that we can heal this country. And he is well poised to do that job extremely well.
Yeah, Schumer. When I think heal the nation, when I think bring everybody together, the first name that comes to mind is Chuck Schumer.
Sure. That's one way to go. That's one approach with all of this.
Let's hear from the man himself. He's telling us let's heal, but first let's just continue to trash the former president. Play seven.
Well, it's a tremendous responsibility, and there's so many things we have to do to make this country better. We have to recover from all of the detritus that the Trump administration has left. But even more important than that, we have to recover from the COVID crisis and then move America forward so that every working person, every family, every person in America feels they have a real chance to advance. That feeling hasn't been very strong in the American people over the last while, and we must do everything we can in our power to restore it.
Is it especially becoming majority leader with a Democrat in the White House?
Well, I'm glad Joe Biden's in the White House either way. But the bottom line is, I will, as majority leader, I'll try to help him get his agenda done.
Schumer in charge, Pelosi in charge, Biden-Harris in charge. And I think you're going to hear the Biden administration is going to be a hyphenated administration. You know, people take a hyphenated name once they marry something. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. That's not my move. Oh, then again, I've never been married. But it's not just the Biden administration. It's going to be the Biden-Harris administration, because she's going to have a much larger role in this, because I still believe they're going to pass this off to her. I don't know how soon. I've said to you, maybe before the midterms, but the more I thought about it, it might make more sense to wait until after the midterms. And that way, you know, and Biden at one point said he was only going to run for one term. This has now been all forgotten. But there was a time at which he was kind of admitting, yeah, I'm really old and I don't know if I can do this, but, you know, I'll pass it off term two. Now it's, oh, no, he's going to last all 8 years. I just don't think. Look, the percentages are not on his side that he'd be in a physical capacity to go 8 years from where he is right now. But you see this there's this generation of politicians who never want to not be important and be powerful, never want to let it go. They'll be the one, you know, they'll go into their hundreds if they can. I mean, Pelosi certainly is one of them. Same thing with Joe Biden.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The
stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast. Podcast Network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of
bit.
Us.
We're
a
figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
Would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Buck's First Thoughts, the news you need to get through your day in 45 minutes. Make sure you subscribe on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Harsanyi time, everybody. Our friend David Harsanyi from National Review in the mix. Go to nationalreview.com to read his latest. David, good to have you, man. Let's jump right into the free speech issue. I do not think it is even a little bit of an exaggeration. In fact, I would just posit right now that this is the most dangerous time for the suppression of speech in the country in my lifetime, I think even more so than post 9/11 because of the implications of what's being said right now. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's the worst time for free speech since maybe Woodrow Wilson in the First World War, Sedition Act and stuff like that. I think that people have figured out a way around the First Amendment to suppress millions of people and the things that they say. I'm not sure that I have any sort of good ideas on how to stop them. But I do know that people whose inclination is to shut down speech do not care about free expression. They don't care about the First Amendment. I think I've noted this on the show before, but simply saying I believe in the First Amendment doesn't mean anything if you don't believe in the values that gird all of that. You know, lots of places don't have a First Amendment. That doesn't mean we don't believe in their freedom of speech as well. It's a value that we share, but we don't share it anymore. We have CNN and Oliver Darcy and other people like that who are just authoritarians who want to shut down their competitors and want to shut down people who say things they don't like. And the media is the biggest offender, but I think the Democratic Party is pretty bad. And I think it bodes very poorly moving forward.
I think there are a lot of powerful corporations and voices who would very much like to return to a time when they don't view it as, I think people have gotten used to Fox News being dominant in ratings, for example, and cable, But there are a lot of folks out there who remember, you know, if you work at CBS News or something, you remember that there was no Fox News until 1996. And we could go back to a country in which there is no full spectrum distribution conservative cable channel. I mean, they're already also going after Newsmax and OAN and pressuring the cable providers with. And unlike Fox, those are two channels that they might actually be successful trying to get them to get carriage pulled. I mean, that's and other cable personalities are calling for this. They, of course, they are.
Yeah. And listen, I don't. You know, the argument is these people are saying dangerous things, like the election was stolen. First of all, I don't care that they're dangerous things. I think you should be able to say whatever you want. As long, and if you're saying something that's slander, someone should sue you, you know, or whatever. So I don't care if there's a QAnon cable network, right? I think they deserve to be on the air. Now, people are always like trying to make, you know, offer some line on what's acceptable and not. That's not the point. It's a neutral principle. I am for free speech. And just because it's difficult to defend doesn't mean I'm not for it. And the idea that we, and like you mentioned, they're going after OAN or whatever it's called, but they're also going after podcasts. I saw, I think, I forget where it was, USA Today had a piece about how podcasters are finding a loophole in which to speak about certain things. Is that a loophole to speak about certain things? You're just an authoritarian censor. The loophole, there is no loophole. The loophole is the one that they are using to shut down speech they don't like. And so anyway, it's just a dangerous way to think about the world, to start saying this is acceptable and this isn't. You know, people always mention yelling fire in a theater. You can yell fire in a theater. That was from a Supreme Court decision around World War I that allowed Woodrow Wilson to throw anti-war socialists into jail.
Yeah, Shank v. U.S., it was pure authoritarianism, and the Holmes decision was an abomination. But people still yell this like it's an argument ender.
I know. So anyway, so we're in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example even today. You know how I feel about lockdowns, and I'm sorry, it is my view of this has always been, if we're even having, and I just mean in general, if society's even having a debate about how effective lockdowns were, that means they weren't effective, because we got put into this with the belief that it would be clear. I mean, you saw The Atlantic and all these different experts, these people were writing in major journals and publications back in May and June. You know, we'd have a 60%, 80% reduction in the virus. And now you look at places like California, all-time record, right? I mean, so if it's not obvious that lockdowns are really effective, they're clearly not effective enough to justify. And by the way, I would argue even an even more extreme position than that, but clearly not effective enough to justify the abuse of power and authority. But here we are. I was just trying to tell people my thoughts on this. And David, I got dinged on Facebook for writing, after COVID, let's mask, and put this in quotes, after COVID, let's mask up during flu season too. It's already starting. Just a few voices here or there are in support of this comment, but it will grow and grow until mask up forever. It's the polite thing to do is the new mantra. There are people right now who are starting the, you know, guys, we probably should actually wear masks after this, because it's so effective and we want to stop the flu as well. Look what we've done to flu cases in this country. I'm making an argument about a future policy. I'm not even negating or questioning mask effectiveness. I'm just saying that, and I get a, you know, this is dinged for, you know, you have to go to the CDC for more information. And the way this works now is I'm going to be shadow banned on Facebook for the next month. For what? For pointing out what is true, there are people advocating for masking even after the mass vaccination happens. The argument for masking after you've been vaccinated is insane, but people are making that argument still.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even understand. Like, you can't say the election was stolen. Like, why can't I say those words? It's ridiculous. But on the mask thing, I mean, I'm pretty radicalized on this now, in the sense that I'm sorry that I supported any lockdowns ever at all. I mean, I just don't think the government has the right to tell you not to go to church or not to go to your business. If people want to lock themselves down, that's their business. If people want to tell you not to want to tell you to wear a mask in their place of business, that's fine. but I shouldn't be forced to do it, you know, to be fined if I'm walking in the street, et cetera. There's just no, government has no power to do that. And I mentioned it again on this show. You have governors who act like dictators. And I mean that in the most literal sense. In the Roman Empire, they had dictators in times of emergencies that had full power to do whatever they wanted. And that's exactly what we have now for almost a year in states, in Michigan, in Virginia, and in other states, New York. It's just un-American. And I just can't believe that the Supreme Court allows them to do that. There is just no precedent for it in American history.
I'm furious as well that not only has there been all this overreach and, as you point out, the tyranny of these governors, and primarily Democrat governors, although there are some Republican governors that have really been way too willing to go along with the Fauci consensus on this stuff. That guy, Dr. Fauci, I mean, I don't care what anybody says. He's a disaster. I mean, this guy is not helpful. His ideas are not sound. He does not have good judgment, but he's used as this. He's almost this, you know, this. You know, superhuman figure that we all, if you challenge him, you're like, this guy was wrong about the risks and spread of HIV for years and years when he was a top public health authority. But that was decades ago. He's been wrong about this time and time again. But you see in Europe, David, like there was just a protest in the Netherlands and there's a photo of a guy jumping on this police machine that's essentially like a water cannon, you know, anti-protest vehicle. And he's on the windshield. This protester's jumped on the windshield. He's, you know, putting out the middle finger to this guy. And I was like, where is that in this country? They've had huge anti-lockdown protests in Spain, in Germany, in the Netherlands. I mean, in the UK, you know, thousands of people gathering together. Here in America, we just sort of sit around like, yeah, you know, maybe one day the vaccine. Well, what's it going to take?
I don't know. That's an interesting thought. Maybe people are less inclined to listen here as it is in many places. So I don't know. You know, when you have urban areas with tons of people, it probably becomes more, you know, apparent, or maybe they're enforcing it harsher. But those are just guesses. I don't know why. I don't know why Americans aren't more upset by this. I think there's a lot of scaremongering going on. And again, I'm not diminishing what's happened. We know what's happened. Hundreds of thousands of people have died. But the idea that we should just shut everyone down when mostly this is a disease that affects older people, we could have protected them. We could have protected other, you know, parts of the population that were susceptible to it and allowed us, you know, allowed the economy to move on, to go on. And it just didn't happen that way. And you're right with St. Fauci, you know, my problem with him isn't even that he's wrong about a lot of things. My problem is that he treats people and American citizens as children. Like he will tell us, you know, oh, I had to say that, what was it? Herd immunity is going to be at 65% because I didn't want to scare people and say it was 90. Like, that's not up to you. You're a public official. You need to tell us the information that you have, and then we make decisions. This is why I hate when people say scientists should be running things. Scientists do not balance out, you know, in their thought process, all the things that go on in society. It is dangerous to allow scientists to run things. It's dangerous to allow them to lie to people.
St. Fauci, David, the original sin for me of St. Fauci was, and I believe this is BS. I do not believe that this is even really true. He was dismissive about the public wearing masks, and we're told because he didn't want us to all run out and buy the N95 masks and there wouldn't be enough for healthcare providers. That means this would be like someone telling you as a doctor, don't take that antibiotic because I'm worried that somebody else who might need it more to save their life won't have it. That is what he did. That is immoral. It is wrong. But he gets this pass on it. He gets this pass. And you know what the truth is? It's because he knew that the data up until then, and he knew that the science up until then did not support the trade-off of what he now tells us is obvious. But he can't say that. So he says, oh, I made this. This idea that he lied to us for our own good about masks, this is awful. But people think that this is an excuse.
Like they're children. And you know, and there was a piece in the Times, I think today or yesterday, where they talk about vaccines and how a lot of these public officials in government are downplaying the effectiveness of vaccines.
Yep.
For, I don't know why, because they think that, you know, people are going to act irresponsibly or whatever. That's not up to them. This is a free country, or was. And we can act in any way we feel like within the law. And it's not for them to treat us like children.
Go ahead, David.
Policy because, yeah, I'm sorry, because politicians are not as bright as everyone thinks, I hope. And I hope they don't think that, but they aren't bright. And they make policies on what Fauci says. The governor of Michigan is not bright. She just does whatever Fauci says. So if he's lying, she's basing public policy on his lies. And that's dangerous, or not just him, other CDC officials and government officials.
And we're speaking to David Harsanyi of National Review. Read his latest. He's a clear thinker and he actually cares about free speech at nationalreview.com. David, the next fight, and you're already seeing this start to happen, and because this comes up in that New York Times article, this idea that we should all mask up after we're vaccinated, that is rooted in a premise that they'll start to lose control of making people mask. And so maybe then we'll all be safer if we all mask until we're all sure. But on an individual basis, it is irrational. It is irrational to tell someone they have to wear a mask after they've been vaccinated because of, in the Pfizer trial, one out of 30,000 people actually got sick, didn't die, got sick with COVID after being vaccinated. If you have a 1 in 30,000 chance of getting sick, which means a 1 in 30,000 chance of even getting it and passing it to anybody else. So now that's not, you still have to wear. These people are insane. This is crazy.
They like to control you. And they're going to say, why is it okay that 50,000 people a year die of flu when we can just stop flu and put masks on, as if we're supposed to walk around being safe from all things all the time? It's ridiculous. As soon as I get that vaccine, I'm not wearing a mask anymore. I hate wearing a mask now, and I don't think it's good for society to wear a mask. I don't want to get into the specifics, but just interactions with people are weird.
No, it's dehuman. It dehumanizes all of us. There's a reason why the Taliban dresses women like beekeepers. There's a dehumanization to the depersonalization of your appearance in this way. It is not good for society. I'm gearing up for this fight. I'm going to get banned from social media for it, though, David. I'm going to get kicked off of platforms for saying post-vaccine, you should not have to mask. And Fauci, if he had any guts whatsoever, would say that. But we still have about 40% of New York City schools closed down because he doesn't have the guts to say it's outrageous that they still have schools shut down. He doesn't want to offend the lib CNN watching consensus.
But have you noticed a shift in sort of the shutdown stuff since Biden won the election, with Cuomo saying we can't go on doing this forever and other liberals? I think now, because it's not useful to them, and people call me a conspiracy theorist about this, but I don't think I am. I think that you'll see people being more positive, putting more positive spins on things, wanting to open things up. They don't want the economy failing under Biden, but they do want to keep controlling you. So I think that will be interesting, especially with the masks. But more than that, the speech. The speech bothers me more than anything. There's no reason I shouldn't be able to say the election was stolen, because you know what? Maybe it was. Maybe one day it will be. And what, I can't say those words because it offends someone? It's also this sort of, they've used the Capitol riots to sort of smear everyone. Jake Tapper does it all the time on CNN, to smear everyone as some kind of radical conspiracy theorist for having any questions that do not comport to his worldview. And it's a way to sort of chill debate. And I think it's dangerous.
Harsanyi, we're in this one together, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us. Nationalreview.com. Read David's latest. Please support his work. Follow him on social media before both of us get kicked off. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall on tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes. The families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's t2t.org.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.